Hey, it's Beth from Vermont, and you're listening to the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
Together, sit down on your floor and listen to your records. Heaven is whenever we can get together. Lock your bedroom door and listen to your records. We got bored, so we started a podcast about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steady stream of the unified scene, all the news and reviews of the band that we love, you love, the confetti dealers love. Hello, everybody. This is Stage Right Mike on the mic, and I can talk hold steady all night. And when I like to talk hold steady heavy, I like to jump over to the rest of the Hood Rat Pack. And today with us, we have, as always, the unified scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Gasper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. But you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me Charlie Daniels.
Ooh, that's a classic. Well, why is that, Gasper?
Because I'm the best it's ever been.
How's that working out for you?
Not so good at all. Not good. People keep calling me Charlie Brown, so I think I'll stick with King of Queens.
Ooh, you really pulled the football away from us on that one. So.
Yeah, I guess I did. And unfortunately, this would be the part where I would introduce our third Mike, Kevin, is whenever, but he's away on business and missed this episode. So unfortunately, we miss you, Kev. Look forward to having you back. But ironically, yeah. What we're going to cover is the weekend in Portland, which is the We Can Get Together weekend, which is where Kevin takes his namesake from. So it's kind of sad he couldn't be here. But why don't you tell him what we got on deck?
Yeah, we should call him Kevin is wherever from now on. We're going to miss him. That sucks. So what we have on deck here is we have some really enthusiastic guests today, Kyle and Ella. And, well, they'll tell you where they're from. They're longtime fans, and they have a really interesting breakdown for sure on this week's or on the Portland shows.
Yeah, man, it sounds like they had a great time, and I can't wait to jump into that episode. But you know what? Before we do, I just wanted to mention one thing real quick. If you've been checking out the Positive Posting Group and you've been checking out, Craig's postings, Knowledge Ra is working on a film project for school. You might remember Knowledge from a previous episode. We did interview him. He does the sound for Massive Nights. Real great guy. So he's in school for film. He's doing a film called The Waiting Room, which is a short film. It's part of his school project. And part of that project is that he has to raise money for it on a crowdfunding forum. So he's trying to raise about $2,500. He's a little more than halfway there, and we'd love to see him get helped out. So if you could find it in your heart, head on over to GoFundMe and just search for The Waiting Room, or you could search for Knowledge Ra, which is KNOWLEJRA, and it'll pop right up. And if you can give, please do. We'd love to see him reach his goal.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a talented guy. So it'd be great to see him get there.
Awesome. All right, man. You ready to jump into the Portland weekend?
Let's do it. So we are joined today by Kyle and Ella, and so welcome, guys.
Hello.
So you guys went to the Portland shows. It sounds like you went to a lot of stuff there. Why don't you tell us where you're talking to us from now, and what's the first thing you did when you got to Portland, and we'll just kind of start there.
Yeah, we went to a lot of things the weekend. I came in from Virginia. That's where I am. And I got in Wednesday night and hung out at a karaoke bar. A really grimy karaoke bar. It was great.
Classic.
Was this your first time in Portland?
It was, yeah. I'd never been there before, and it was on my, to-visit list. So I was pretty excited that that they set up a weekend there. Yeah, what did we do on Thursday, Kyle? you guys should start this with the same question that Craig starts his podcast with, which is the, how is your memory? And my answer is that my memory is awful. So full disclaimer there.
Gotcha. Well, Kyle, you're in Montana, right?
I'm in Montana. I don't know how many of these residencies this is, but this was probably like in-person show, 40, maybe 49, maybe 50.
Ooh, well
and,
done.
And the majority of those, all but three, were with this lineup. So going to these weekend events makes sense for me. Cool. You know, being out of Montana, if you look like cost per show, if I want to see Gaslight Anthem, you know, I'm seeing a one-off in Boise, and it's going to cost X hundred dollars. So by the time I fly and get everywhere, these weekender events were nice, and they had really good extra programming on Saturday that I'm sure we'll dig into.
This was your first time in Portland as well?
No, this isn't the first time in Portland. First time I went to Portland, I saw Bob Dylan, a few years back.
Nice.
And then I saw Craig's solo show at Mississippi Studios, where the band played the first night, which was where the confetti conspiracy started.
Yeah, that made a pretty big splash on social media. What exactly happened with Confetti Gate?
So they were really strict about it. Like no other venue that I have encountered before. Like, I don't know if they were owned by the same people. We didn't really get a solid answer there. Mississippi Studios, it kind of made sense because they had a rug in the middle of the room. And I understand how that would be difficult to clean confetti off of. The second venue, they did the same thing where they asked at the door the first night. And the first throw, we got away with without issues. It was the second throw when they started to see it come out again. I guess there were like people up on either side of the audience looking down with walkie-talkies, and there was a crowd incursion. Like this guy charged in, came at me, looked at my handful of my double handful, and he looks at me and just goes, and it's like, I don't know. It just appeared. So as that was happening, somebody behind him sort of bombed him, like, with a handful of confetti as he was trying to talk to me, which was a really great distraction tactic. Didn't really help the situation or his need to control the situation much. But he charged off into the crowd. The best part of this is that he was taking our confetti and throwing it on the ground. Like, just dumping it right where it would have ended up anyway. After the show, you know, TK and I kind of stayed behind and offered to sweep, and we ended up sticking around for like half an hour and doing the full cleanup afterwards, and buttered him up a little bit, and kind of said, you know, like we this is what's gonna happen, and like even if we get the word out and tell people not to do it, you know, it's such a part of the show at this point that somebody's going to bring in confetti, and there's not much that anybody can do to stop it as a group effort.
Right.
And, you know, we did. Like, we were there, like, on our hands and knees picking up the last bits of confetti. And so I think they were kind of like, you know, well, like, as long as we don't have to do it, you know? So, we kind of won them over a little bit, and I think that the band manager talked to them as well and just said, you know, like, were there any other problems? Did you have any other issues? Obviously the answer was no. And, you know, like, if this is the biggest issue that you are having at our shows, like, I think that maybe we can just overlook the confetti a little bit. didn't stop us from getting really right. stealthy about smuggling it in the next day.
Yeah, it sounds like the confetti was already out of the bag by the time they got you, so I don't know how they're going to put... But Kyle, what's your side of the story? Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, it echoes Ella's that, you know, there was signage, and some of us already brought it in that to the first venue, and then the second one, you know, signage was ready, but yeah, like... It was like a SWAT exercise. Like killer parties came out, and there's guys on headsets and swarming, knocking out of people's hands, and it was like, wow. Oh, okay. So then on, you know, the next, you know, Ella mentioned that night, and the next people stayed back to clean up. But I definitely have a stronger opinion between the paper confetti and the tissue confetti on cleanup, but yeah, I think it's time maybe the fans or the band just get a leaf blower or one of those kind of sucky mulchers.
It was suggested a couple times.
For pickup.
Tad suggested that, actually.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. He's a big outdoors guy with that type
he
of
He was
stuff.
Really excited about his leaf blower.
He probably had one in his trunk, knowing him.
That's really cool that you guys helped to clean up, though. And I mean, it's very apropos for the community. Like that's what the community's about. Like it's not, no one's really trying to mess with anyone. It's just what it is. But when you were bringing up the sneaking in the confetti, I wonder how much Mosh Pit Josh got involved. We had a great conversation with him where he talks about smuggling in people's backpacks full of confetti.
A lot of people have helped me bring in bags. I usually bring in over 2 pounds a show.
Wow.
They search him at the airport every time because he flies in with an entire bag full of confetti.
That might be over the legal amount in Portland, though. Seriously, it could be.
So I have to ask, what happens when you're going through TSA and they open your bag to find a bunch of confetti?
I've kept it in a separate bag. I'll tell them it's confetti before they scan it. And then, because it's, I mean, it's dense, like.
Wow.
Like. Those packages. Like so it's like it's just confetti. I'm not hiding anything in it. There's nothing else stuffed in it. And I just let it go. And it's about 50-50 on getting stopped.
For those listening at home, Kyle is holding up examples of kilo size bags of confetti.
I buy by the pound, but yes, that's kind of how it is. So like you can get the little Mexican confetti. It's like little paper confetti for about $10 for a pound on Amazon. That's probably really good for outdoors. And then the tissue one was definitely easier to clean up inside, but they had like, it just kind of depends on the floor, you know? Right. So they had some kind of like tactile stuff on the floor, but yeah, that's usually how I go.
I will say the smaller, like the dot confetti that Ella was holding up, we tried using that in like a promo with some stickers and stuff, and I found that it doesn't fly very well.
That's the other downside for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it right. goes up and down. You got to really get a good fistful, and then the tissue confetti floats a lot better. And then there's ones that are kind of thinner that are circle that really floats. Right. It's just a little bit lighter. No glitter.
Never do right. glitter.
Screw
Don't
you.
Do the glitter.
Like that yeah. besides it sucks. And then metal confetti will screw up stuff, but I had like little metal confetti at empty bottle go in my mouth and I was just like spitting up. Right. And then I like these are like tubes.
Oh, so with, those tissue. Like explode? Yeah, yeah.
So this is, TSA, this is all just, you just flick it. So there's no cartridge or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And that gets pretty good, decent height. But and then so what we usually do for like sneaking it in, because you know some people don't know, is like we'll take it and we'll put it into, because I saw you did a Massive Nights, the like snack size bags.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So I got this from Corey and Cammy. So I'll use a gallon bag or a quarter size bag. So then you can just send it out. You don't have to walk the crowd. You can just send it out at the appropriate time. Timing is a big thing.
Right.
Don't get, if you give it to them too early, they'll throw too early. And then you can just
confetti. Yeah.
Yeah. You can distribute it. You can distribute it out and just let the bags go. And then you've got separate ones for, you know, killer parties and stuff like that. I have strong, I have strong tested opinions on confetti protocol.
We've done this a few times.
It sounds like it. I wanted to ask you guys about the venue because it says it's like the premier venue spot in Portland, and is it really small? It sounds like it's really intimate and small.
It's a school. Which one? Mississippi Studios?
I loved it. It was first great. It was really small. It was the smallest venue I'd seen them at in a long time, I think. I'm trying to think if there's anywhere that compares, but really, like, recently it's been, like, Bluebird and Brooklyn Bowl and Black. Even Black Cat is bigger than that, I think. But it was really nice. Like, the rug, I'm sure that the confetti was awful to clean out of the rug, but it did make for some really good, like knee support when we were doing the jumping up and down. You know, you gotta take into account the aging fan base with the knees that might be not be able to jump on concrete all the time. I really appreciated that. It was nice.
As Alice was going into, like, both venues, so it was GA floor for both of them. The other one was like a school theater, essentially. Okay. It was an old school. But they had at least GA on the main floor, but then they had some GA seating around the top and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
So to that kind of demographic piece on, like, who wants to be in the mix and who's just kind of relaxing in the back, it was nice.
Yeah, so to your point, I was kind of Googling it, and it sounds like Mississippi Studios might own both places. I don't know. Google is confusing, but would that make sense to you guys? You think it's the same owners?
It sounds about right.
Yes, that would track probably scheduling, because even the Saturday events were at Rev Hall as well.
You want to start with night one? Like, what were the highlights of night one? Did you hear some songs that you haven't heard in a while, or how'd that go?
I would have to pull up the set list. Oh, wait, no, I have the set list right here, I think. They started with Grand Junction on night one, right? Yeah, so yep. I have it. So
you
that's
have
helpful.
The actual set list. Nice.
Ooh, she's got
I have the actual set list.
An abridged version.
I think that first night is always a highlight for me live. I love the way that builds. Boys and girls in America.
Don't bother talking to the guys with your hot soft eyes.
And let's see, what else? Southtown. Those big, like, sing along, you know, they're not like downer songs, but they're not jump around songs either. Something about those, right. Like, they're so much better live too.
Right.
I think first night was a highlight that first night.
Now, this was the first bigger show since the record dropped, I believe, right? So,
yeah.
In reviewing the record, we found some mixed opinions. People have some strong opinions about certain songs that they're not crazy about. How did these songs go over live? Because I have a feeling that a lot of the songs that people are having issues with are going to translate differently live, and I'm curious what you guys thought.
A few got, like, were held for the quiet show at the record store, but I mean, Sideways Skull is a jam.
Right.
Like, Grand Junction is a good one to start with. Distortions of Faith was the first one in the encore, mm-hmm. and that one in, like, the back half, you know, they kind of built it up a little bit, had a lot more guitar work and stuff into it. So, you know, the bands mentioned it, and you can kind of see it too, where, you know, they lay it down for the album, but then they keep playing with it live, so that all of the stuff in this new lineup kind of evolves. And then the two new ones they played first time live were City at 11 and
Flyover Halftime, I believe.
Yeah, Flyover Halftime.
That was night three, I think, got the two. I think they split it, actually. Night two got, yeah, so City at 11 City is 11. Night two. That's the first time that's played live.
Yeah.
And then fly over halftime with night three.
You could kind of tell that it was the first time. It was pretty
rough. Oh, wow.
It was kind of rough. It was like, there were some forgotten lyrics and just like you can kind of tell, you know, like when they're not as comfortable getting into it live. Like they haven't found those places where they can like sink in.
Well, you know, when they're playing and Craig starts to lose it a little bit and he looks at the audience for cue. I don't know if that's what he's doing, but you know, if I don't know the lyrics, I don't want eye contact. Like, I can't help you here. I can't help you with City at 11. Right. You're on your own.
Those are some of my favorite moments when he, like, you see him flub a lyric or forget a lyric, and then he just kind of laughs it off. It's fun.
I think, like, Grand Junction on the opposite side of the fence. Like, I love that song live. That, like, was my favorite song on the new album. Since the first time we heard it live, I think. And I really love that one as a live track. So, like, yeah, like, City 11 was kind of an anomaly. The rest of them seemed like it wasn't the first time they were playing them live. So, go figure.
Gotcha. And many of these songs, it's not the first time they're playing them live. They have been playing them since before the record came out. But there's something different about once they're in the rotation regularly that I think you will see them develop like that. I'm specifically curious about Flyover Halftime because my opinion is that's going to end up being the most lifter-puller type song off of this record. Like that, those moments at the end where I could picture him yelling as a fan on the field. Like, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm curious if he performs it that way yet.
Yeah, that was a fun... I think it was also like... It was tricky because I feel like a lot of the audience weren't necessarily as dedicated to hearing the new songs live as we were. So I feel like as people start to learn the lyrics a little bit more and like are looking forward to those, you know, little moments in the same way that the diehard fan base is, I feel like they'll get a lot more fun with the shared experience, I guess.
Now, what do you guys think of the new record?
I don't think I've listened to it enough to have a, like, real opinion of it yet. I think that ODP really grew on me, and I think that this one will as well. Yeah, I just need more time. Like, Grand Junction is the only song that's been sort of consistently stuck in my head since I started listening to it. But it's been growing on me, so.
There's you know, call-out tracks that I know that when I'm in the shower and I'm yelling, Alexa! Plays, you know, something. So I know there's, you know, certain ones elevate over others, but, you know, I lament sometimes being able to come in it as an album and, you know, without hearing, you know, by my own, you know, self-harm here, like, oh my gosh, Sideways Skull, I'm going to listen to this just a ton of times back to back. And they release another single and I listen to that a bunch. So then when you're in the album, it's kind of, you know, would have it stuck out the same way. So, you know, that's one of those, I'd say generally about kind of discovering music. I prefer albums, and sometimes an album track surfaces for me and I'm like, oh, that was the single? It was something else, you know? I dig it and I like how they have all things live for sure.
I see what you're saying, though, like getting so many of the tracks off the record prior, it does change the experience of getting the record, because I almost found myself listening to the second half of the record more just to absorb it, because it's like, well, I've heard this stuff already. I've played the hell out of it. Like, let's listen to the stuff I haven't gotten
right
yet.
And that's where, like, what with, like, thrashing, like,
yeah,
like Denver Haircut, but, you know, that one was early. But, like, I love Blackout Sam, but I still, it's weird to kind of, you know, listen to it, you know, in that way of just kind of that front to back, just because of the familiarity of those those singles.
Right.
Yeah, that was like me when Thrash Into the Passion came out. I was like, everybody should release their songs two at a time. I go, the album's dead. This is the digital world. And then they came out with Open Door Policy, and I'm like, I guess I was wrong. I like this better. Yeah.
You got to have something to promote. But, I mean, they played Sketch. They dug up some of Sketchy Metals, but what was kind of unique, you're talking about unique songs, they did Chill Out Tent, which you know, you might get at Brooklyn Bowl, but not a lot of other places.
Right.
And they did that with the opening act, right?
Yes.
That was... Who was it? Yeah, it was... So yes. Willie and Amy from the Dawn. And they did, and she got sick. Now she's pounding way too shaky. She don't want to tell the doctor everything she's taken.
The paramedics hovered over like a summer morning. So I was just curious. You guys have been to, both have been to so many shows. How did this residency rank for you guys? Did anything stand out different about it? Did anything like, I mean, what are your thoughts about it?
After you go to so many shows, there's like little moments that you remember of like, you know, when they did like Brooklyn Bowl, when they do like Cowboy Song, or Jeff Rosenstock comes out, or, you know, they really go, you know, Steve, they throw in, Steve's got a solo on a song they've played 100 times and now Steve's doing it different, you know,
right.
Like there's little things like that. But personally, they start to kind of run together. So I look at it kind of like the set of like, Denver was a great venue. There were great venues here. The story is definitely going to be more on the confetti, but just meeting the new people, the hang, you know, Ella and I and a bunch of others kind of coordinated. Hey, which show are we going to? The schedule's full this year. It's not like they're doing 3 this summer. Are we going to LA or Denver? It's like, okay, they're doing this one off. There's 3 shows here. There's 2 there. Just being able to get everybody together. And like when we did Portland this year, like we met people and hung out with them in Denver. And we're like, oh, we're doing this show. Are you going to come? And we can kind of coordinate, you know, what are we doing during the day? Are you doing sound check? Are you doing this Saturday event, which was pretty cool. So I kind of graded on that. And yeah, for me, it was just a fun weekend with a bunch of different people with different backgrounds, but we share that, you know, same passion for the band, and we can lean into our fandom a little bit.
Awesome.
I was thinking like along the same lines that like I have also been seeing this band since, you know, like 2007, I think. I think I'm going on 40 shows, and I think that musically they've always been amazing. Like the band has always been incredible, and the thing that really has changed things lately is the residency setup and the fact that we can, you know, all make friends in one city and hang out for a whole weekend and then come together in a different place. And I think that like that is what has really like defined the last couple groups of shows is that like team spirit, kind of like the attitude of everybody being in it together and like everybody working together to make sure that everybody's having a good time and like working together to sweep up the confetti. And like we custom ordered Hawaiian shirts on Friday with the band members' faces on them, and like 10 of us were wearing Hawaiian shirts with Holt City faces on them.
Wow.
And that was a great moment. Like I really, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
But those are the things for me that really like, yeah, stick out.
So what were the reaction to the Hawaiian shirts?
Well, we've got a friend that we've met through the shows, and it was his name's Jeff from Seattle, and it was one of those things where my story with him is, like I started talking to him, I think in Denver or something, and like, oh, we've been to the same show 10 times, and like he's like, oh, do you know Emily? Like, yeah, I've known Emily for years. Like, oh, I know. Like, you start introducing people to, like, yeah, I know that person.
Right.
Like, you know, so he always wears a Hawaiian shirt, and he's just a great guy, and he's a nice big guy to have in a crowd when things are going wrong. You know, Ella just came up with the idea to kind of celebrate him and his Hawaiian shirt, so we did that and got the band's faces on them, just because if you're getting Hawaiian shirts, like for a couple bucks more, why not have one with Galen on it? So yeah, we kind of coordinated that, but you know, that's kind of where you lean into, are we overly fanatical?
I don't know that you can be overly fanatical about this.
To quote that guy.
I'm trying to find boundaries.
So that's what I love about it. Like, nobody's trying to find boundaries, Kyle. Don't kid yourself. Like, well, we all lean into it because that's fun.
I mentioned I really like the donut cake poster from the show earlier this year, and someone's like, I can get you one. I was like, no, I'm only getting posters for shows I've been to. Like, I've got to have some kind of protection here.
That I totally agree with.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the that's just kind of the fun thing of having some nice weekend friends where, you know, and Carlos is crying, we can just all scream, you know, I love you, I feel you. Like, those are little call outs, even on the new songs. Right. It's kind of nice to have a group and we can all knowingly nod to each other these little lines.
That's the thing I think is so cool about this whole group thing is that, there are a lot of band crowds and band fandoms where it turns into this, like, competitive, weird, everybody's too cool, people don't want to seem like they care too much, I think, especially with a lot of the bands that, like, the Hold Steady came up with, like, that whole scene, there's just this attitude of, like you don't want to seem like you care too much, and I think that the Hold Steady have this fan base where it has become, you know, cool to care, and, right, like, cool to show that you are really happy to be there. And, like, nobody's going to give you a look for, like, jumping up and down and knowing every word and, like, acting them out and everything. As long as you're not, like, hitting other people in the face, you know, like, right, absolutely. Be happy. Share your joy. That's what we're all there for. And I really love that. I love being in a crowd where you get to express all of that. Because a lot of crowds, it's not the same. It's just not.
I agree, because, you know, they always say it's not cool to wear the T-shirt of the band that you're going to see. You can't wear their T-shirt. But then when you go to Hold Steady, you guys are wearing Hawaiian shirts. And we're all, you know, we're just taking it to the max.
What? That's adjacent. That's adjacent. I literally had this conversation in Portland. That's adjacent. You can wear a Twins jersey. You can wear a Golden Gophers shirt.
D4.
I think it's that thing where it's such a passionate, you know, tight fan base. You know, it's not like I'm going to be at a, Paul McCartney concert and it's just like, okay, we're going to have to struggle through 5 Wing songs here, or, you know. I had Californication on a Burn CD and now I'm at a Red Hot Chili Peppers show in Fargo, right? You know, like, you're going to have people, like, especially with us, you know, where we are and where, you know, as a group, you know, like, we know the songs, we know the new songs, and, you know, we know when to clap, when we're speed clapping, and then the people I really get attracted to at the show, like, I met somebody in Denver like this, like, we just had the same kind of, like, we're just gonna act out the whole thing with our hands, regardless of whatever Craig's doing. Like, we're doing our own thing. And it was just like, okay, you're standing next to me now for these shows, you know? So.
One of the things that made this residency particularly stand out from everything they've done so far is there was a lot of stuff planned around these shows. You had between the in-store and the guitar clinic and all the things going on, like, and you guys went to a lot of that stuff, right?
All of it.
Nice.
All of the things. We went to all of the things. Yeah. It was really cool on Saturday. Like, that was really unusual, like a new setup, which was a lot of fun. They referred to it as a SteadyCon. which I liked a lot. It was cool, like, getting a chance to hear from some of the band members who don't necessarily get to, like, take center stage as often.
Right.
Like getting to hear Steve and Tad sort of nerd out, not just about their guitars, but like complimenting each other and saying like, oh, you're so good at this. And like, I really love when you, and like talking about how they interact on those songs, like in those moments that we all love so much. I really liked hearing about that. And I know nothing about guitar. So
awesome. Yeah. Now the guitar clinic, was were they actually like showing how to play guitar, or was it just more a discussion about guitar playing?
I think it's a concept that we'll see evolve a little bit over time, over, you know, Steve and Tad doing some guitar work either virtually or, you know, at these kind of pieces here, like they did like they had trivia over there in London. It was just like, what's something extra to with the fandom in the band? So yeah, they pulled out. It wasn't like, hey, this is how you play spinners, you know, like they've done before. But it was a great conversation led by Emily Harris of the Get Offset podcast. Mm-hmm. Our friend and gear influencer. And but really, you know, it was just Steve and Tad talking kind of a little bit about their board, and I understood some of it, not all of it, when they kind of got in there, but, you know, what kind of guitars they have on different songs, you know, the luggage, and then kind of how some of the things develop. So they both, you know, played a little bit, or they demonstrate something, but it was very kind of more of a loose podcast piece than like, bring your guitar.
Nice. That's honestly one of the things I'm most jealous about not being at that weekend, because I think that would have been amazing to be there for the two of them talking about guitar.
I don't know what the plan is, but all those events were recorded.
Oh, that's amazing.
I don't know the plan. I'm just saying.
I think they are putting one on Craig's podcast of the whole group. Was that one of the nights?
Yes.
Was that a different,
that's
different
they, night? They recorded. That's how I remember it. The whole study is the guest on That's How I Remember It, which I'm looking forward to them releasing.
Yeah, it was like a very convention style. There's three events with a break in between: the guitar clinic, which we discussed, Franz having kind of like an author book conversation, mm-hmm. which the second half of that, he really talked more about his teaching and how he approaches literature with his students. I found that really interesting. A little bit of a book reading, and then the Craig podcast, which I think it's been announced that's going to come out next week or the week after,
right?
Depending on when this is released. But you know, it was the Craig podcast, just with a panel,
right?
And as Ella mentioned, you can hear what Bobby sounds like,
right? Because he never gets it right, exactly.
For like the first time ever.
Because even during the Q&As, Galen will step up to a mic. You know, Bobby's like in the background. But
right.
No, it was unique programming. And then again, for all of us to just hang out and kind of know where everybody's going to be at, it was a good deal.
And then the in-store, which was really special. We got to hear Oaks, which was really, we had been looking forward to that one. That was a song that like everybody had sort of discussed wanting to see live. That was on everybody's like bucket list moment thing. I changed my flight like at the last minute so that I could stay for that. I wasn't ready to go home yet. And it was absolutely worth it for that. I was really excited for that.
Yeah, it was in a legendary Portland music store. Keep Portland Weird. It's the original place where that was plastered on. And I mean, it was, you know, a record store with racks of music. And then they played kind of in like a balcony mezzanine, mm-hmm. down, and they just kind of snaked people through the aisle before the set. You know, they called it a quiet set, but, you know, they were electrified and everything. And Craig, you know, does a little more talk and introducing the songs. I think there was a couple. Ella's got the set list on the back of a LaCroix bottle. That was the official set list. It was on the back of a LaCroix box.
That's amazing.
And, you know, Craig, you know, just a little more talking and pieces like that. So if you went to the shows plus the record store event, you got all of it. And, of course, they had, you know, Teeth Dreams and all the records available for sale, and then you could line up and get stuff signed. So obviously we did that and got to give our nods to the boys.
Right. We did the in-store in New York, and the in-store set, I believe, is pretty much the same everywhere they're doing the in-stores. But I do really appreciate hearing the songs in that way, like that more subdued but still electric versions of those songs was very cool and different from like a soundcheck version of that song.
Franz has more, in my opinion. I know little to I like pizza, and I couldn't tell you why. So, like, where my musical literacy to break down these things are. But, like, you know, I think it's just Franz has more room for, you know, pieces, and they can kind of arrange it a little bit. Like, if they did a full set like that, I'd go. And that's kind of with these other things. Like, if they were doing an acoustic set somewhere, it's like, yeah, I'll do that. It'll be a different vibe for sure. But, yeah, no, I like the variety, and you know, you mentioned they were playing Oaks elsewhere, so it was one of those like, well, if I'm gonna hear it, this is where I gotta go.
Right, pretty you much because like, they're not playing it anywhere else, so you're right.
It's hard to put in a set list and you know whatever else might be happening. So that was, you know, by far a highlight for the weekend. So I strongly recommend, you know, if you can get to one of those events, you know, do it.
Right.
Do I count that? I have a question for you guys.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So I count if it's a show or if they were the opener. I don't count the performance sound checks that come with these weekenders right. as like a show. Do I count the in-store event as a show?
I think you do.
I say yes. Yeah, they were there playing instruments. I call that a show where there's an audience. Yeah.
Here's my logic behind that. That is its own ticket. Sound checks are add-ons to your four-day pass at Brooklyn Bowl or whatever. But to go see them at Rough Trade in New York, you're buying a completely separate ticket in and of itself. So that's its own show.
They didn't charge for the Portland in-store.
Oh, that was pretty cool.
Second of all, I've seen them at festivals. Like, oh, festivals totally count?
Yeah, absolutely they count.
Yes.
I mean, it's been a while since I saw them at a festival, but like...
Yeah,
festival set is like an opener
set. I'm sure there's like half a show.
Oh, festivals?
Yeah, pretty much.
Festivals is a full show because it's like an opener set.
No. Like the sound checks. I think the sound checks count as like half of a show.
Well, that's where it's as many songs as the in-store.
If you're counting.
But they're kind of practicing at the soundcheck,
I think that you
right?
can count it however you want. I stopped keeping track.
No,
so,
like, I want to do it just so I can say, like, how many times you see the hold steady? Oh, 57.5.
Yeah.
Not enough.
So just to make everybody mad, what if you pay for a live stream? Huh? Huh? Just kidding.
I don't count those. They are like a pay-per-view thing.
Yeah.
You know, like at that point, there's a lot of acts like, oh yeah, I saw Bruce Springsteen. What? Oh yeah, it was a 1998 pay-per-view.
And it doesn't feel like a show, right? Because like you're saying, you're not there with all these people and having that whole community thing, which is a big part of this. So I agree with you.
With the pandemic shows, I've got a young daughter, and you know, she saw it and we threw confetti and everything like that, and she wants to go to a real show. She's like, is this what it's like? I was like, kinda, but the temperature's warmer and it smells better here.
Mm-hmm.
Like that like if there was a reason to wear masks again, like you forget, like beer drinking crowds is, I'm aged out of it.
Fair enough.
I wear like an old pair of Vans. Those are like my actual concert shoes because I just know they're gonna get beer spilled on them. And I actually have a pair of concert shoes that I wear just to hold steady shows, just for that reason.
I literally have the same. I have a pair of pink Con high tops that I probably need to get something better with support. But yeah, no, those are my. Those are my concert shoes. You know, I gotta maintain some traditions.
There. How do you do that for 4 days? It's no wonder you're hurting by day four. Like, you need some art, you need some better arch support than that.
That's
I have my
a fair
Doc
point.
Martens. My toes never get smashed.
I disagree. I'm a barefoot enthusiast, and all I can wear is Vans and Converse Chuck Taylors because they don't.
Yeah. So Mike actually runs marathons, and I have a picture of him running a marathon barefoot because he's a maniac. So he's not lying about the barefoot thing.
That was just once, though, so far. So
once. But
once. Once is more than enough to run a marathon barefoot.
So before we get you out of here, what do you want to say about the general state of the Hold Steady? This is your state. You were on a podcast. Give us your state of the union, steady state of the union. What, anything you're thinking right now, Ella?
I feel like they just keep getting better and better. It's the same thing that we talked about with the new songs, where like it takes a little time to sort of settle into a groove, and they need to like relax into those songs live and start to work together a bit before they really like become something special. And I think the band has been the same way over the 15 years now that I've been seeing them live. Is, you know, like, yeah, when they were at like maybe the height of their popularity, there was like a lot of energy and it was fun to jump around, but then they needed just some time to like settle in and get to know each other and figure out how to work together. And like it really just blows me away what good musicians they are these days.
Right.
Like how well they work together. And I like some of those songs are just beautiful live. And it makes me so happy to see that and to know that they are still going strong. And better every time, honestly.
Absolutely. And I feel like the new stuff, like, it's getting a bad rap at the moment from some people. And I remember when Heaven Is Whenever.
Who are these
out.
People?
I don't know. They're not part of
yeah,
my
who are those
community.
People?
But I mean, I remember when Heaven Is Whenever came out, it got a hard time. And there's still people who aren't crazy about that record. But to me, that's one of my favorite records. And it's because it does, like you're saying, it gets played and it just becomes part of the canon of the Hold Steady. And as it gets played and toyed with and you learn the lyrics and you find your sing-along parts, like, that's what's going to happen to this record. And I'm positive of that. Similar with Teeth Dreams. Teeth Dreams was not a fan favorite for a while, and now there's people who clamor for Teeth Dreams songs.
We've had extensive conversations about Teeth Dreams.
All positive.
And what about you, Kyle? What are your thoughts on the steady scene these days?
As I mentioned, like, you know, I only saw three or four shows before this lineup, which is now the longest set they had. You know, there's a lot I could kind of say about the community, but really for me personally, I remember, oh geez, I was in my 20s and my boss told me about how he had a friend that would travel around to see Supertramp. And I was like, Supertramp? Like, I dig Breakfast in America, like the album, like their stuff, and they're like, sure. Like, good stuff. But I was like, what? Follower is Supertramp? Like, that seemed odd. But it's really, you know, probably my age and what I was going through in 2008 or whatever, or 2007, whenever you got with the band, and just kind of aging with them.
Right.
And like, yeah. Like, okay, I got to go to, like, is this it? Oh, this is Brooklyn. Oh, hey, here's a small set. You know, hey, they're doing these three nice days, and just kind of evolving with them in the music. So that's kind of where, you know, when to bring somebody in, it's like, okay, what do you listen to? Okay, I can pick out two, three songs out of this, you know, 20-year catalog that might get you in the door, you know.
Right.
Same like you would with, like, Bob Dylan. You're going to give Desire, Nashville Skyline, and, you know, Time Out of Mind to different people. for like the new album, kind of like what's the current state piece, you know, I don't really subscribe to like some of those like criticisms. Like one I hear is like, okay, these aren't drugged out teenagers anymore. It's a woman and a dude in an apartment having an awkward like situation.
Right.
Like, hey, that's where I'm at now. You know, like, I'm not going to take too many at a festival. Like, try to get me to a festival, right? I'm like a damn near 40. Like, that's too much song, and I'm not going to pay that much for water. So, like, that's not where I'm at now. So, like, evolving with the songs is great. Now, the criticism of, well, oh, this is kind of more of a Craig song. Like, even my daughter, I was like, Holt said he came out with new stuff. She's like, is it depressing? I was like, there's some awkwardness, but it's self-defining. It is a hold steady song when it's a hold steady song.
Right.
You know, I remember Paul McCartney, someone was asking about the White Album, Paul McCartney, you know, should the White Album be a single or should it be a double album? And McCartney's like, well, it is what it is. It's the Beatles White Album. Fuck off. Like, it's self-defying. Why are you asking this question? I think the same with, like, this, the new stuff. Like, yeah, that's the old setting song now.
Right.
And we're going with it, and that's where we're moving, and I'm aging with it. But, you know, even if you like things like Sketchy Metal or they're playing Modesto a lot, and Steve's got a great riff there and at the end. So, you know, there's a lot of little surprises in there for you. For introducing somebody to it, if they're fair weather fan or they're kind of aware of them, you know, try to get them to all three nights. I know, you know, Al and I would meet people on that Wednesday, Thursday, and they're like, oh, I'm just here for tonight. I was like, well, what are you doing tomorrow? Oh, I don't know, going to Applebee's. And it's like, I'll see you tomorrow. And those people do show up the next day.
Right.
And then, that'd be kind of my recommendation, is like, it's a good time. You're going to enjoy it.
Right.
And,
that really is the key, getting people to the live show, because that's the whole experience. And turning someone onto the hold steady for me has always been very hit or miss. And one of the things I find is that if you're somebody who wants to love a band, like, this is a band that lets you love them in a way that no other band does. Like, you get closer to this band than I've ever gotten close to any band. Like, they literally will show up at stuff and, like, talk to you, and, like, we all go to the bar afterwards. Like, you don't see that with other bands.
They have the size of the fan base, kind of where they're at, to have that level of accessibility for sure. And, you know, that's a fun part to it. But, you know, just it's not just like Flaming Lips throwing confetti at you.
Right.
Like, the conspiracy of, you know, Ella and other people just like handing it to you, and like the look on their face, you know, because of an age,
you know, there's not many possible way smuggling it in pockets.
Well, there's not a bunch of 21-year-olds. So there's you know, a 30-year-old there going like, I'm gonna throw confetti, and it's a crowd piece. And there's if you check the Facebook, the band's Facebook, there was a fabulous photographer, and he gave the band hundreds of shots for each show. And, you know, usually you go, the scene photographer, the band will use five or six. Like, the whole state posted them all, and there's a great shot of, like, Ella in there. There's a great shot of other people we mentioned that were part of our group there. And you can see, like, they captured the band in the foreground shooting to the audience, and that kind of dynamic and that participation piece where...
Right.
If there's an Eric Clapton show, you're just gonna see a doctor's wife like holding a $20 wine in a plastic bottle, you know, like it's less of that barrier between the stage and like that kind of total experience. It's not just served to you, like there's confetti canyons. It's more that you're an active participant in in the experience. But I might be wrong about that.
And I think also, like, you're a pretty active participant, I think. I think that part of what I love is that, like, what you said about how it's really hit or miss. Like, people either, like, love them or just don't, like, can't do it. I think, like, part of it is the voice. He has one of those voices that I've always been really like drawn to, you know, John Darnielle, Tom Waits kind of voice, where if you can't handle it, then you can't handle it, and you're never gonna get past the first like three songs.
Right.
But once you really get into it, you love them. Like if you get it, you get it. Right. And I think that I really like that it's that sort of like self-selecting, you know, like there are very few casual Hold Steady fans these days. There's a whole crew of us who are flying across the country regularly. And I think that that really, that also changes the experience in a major, major way. So, there's a lot of bands that I love. There are not a lot of bands that I would fly across the country for.
What's been interesting for me, you know, because we'll see the same person at different cities. At that point, like, okay, you're like us. We should meet. We should at least follow each other on Instagram.
Right.
And, you know, to talk to some of them, just like, oh, yeah, I heard a Craig solo thing that I found out about the Hold Steady. I'm like, you want to what? Everybody meet this person. This is weird, right? I haven't met, my first Hold Steady song was on the Dylan soundtrack, the Crawl Through Window.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Use your hands and your legs, it won't ruin you.
Now how you gonna say that he will haunt you? And I went to the free, MySpace show. I am, and if you were at the Q&A, I am not the one who kissed Craig at the MySpace show. That was an awkward little part of the Q&A that will just roll over. People will hear it later, I'm sure. I've yet to meet someone that's just like, oh, I heard the Game of Thrones bear song, and now I'm at a Hold Steady show. I'm like,
yeah, I don't think that person's
that is interesting.
Out there. But I will say, I've never met anyone who their entry point is the Dylan cover. That's interesting. But it makes sense because you're clearly a Dylan fan, so that's I get it.
Oh, yeah. Well, a buddy of mine said, like, hey, there's a free show, and you got to stand in line. MySpace show. I'm so old. And he's like, did you stand in line for it? So then I went, and I was like, you know, this is 2008 Hold Steady, and it was small venue, and I was, you know, converted. I was like, I don't understand rock and roll. You know, I remember being in the parking lot, and the guy, my buddy, was just like instructing me, like, subpoena Texas, like, just learn something so you can repeat it, because we're gonna be in the front, and just don't stare at him and be weird. I'm like, okay. But then, my first takeaway was Cheyenne Sunrise, you know, kind of the Dylan thing. I'm just like, oh, okay, what's this? Right. And it's kind of been onward from there. But yeah, again, you know, just, you know, where are entry points for fans now and how did they get to it? You know, how to get people to come back, I think, is drag him to a show and make him a confetti co-conspirator.
How about you, Ella? How did you get into the Hold Steady?
I heard them for the first time, I think pretty soon after Boys and Girls came out. And I went to a boarding school where they had like an illegal share network where you could just like, whoever was connected to the school network, you could jack stuff from their iTunes, basically. Cool. And so I downloaded Chips Ahoy, was the first song, and I just like ripped it in a massive pile of other stuff. And at the time, the other stuff was all scene bands. The rest of that load was all like The Academy Is and like Boys Like Girls and like Skinny Jeans, eyeliner, straightened hair, etc. So I downloaded Chips Ahoy in the middle of this, got it stuck in my head, couldn't stop, downloaded the rest of the album, got really into it. And I didn't really have any context for it. Like, I went to see them that fall, and I was like, oh, these guys look like they should be, like, in an office. Like, this is not what I have seen from any other band that I have any other experience seeing in an actual show. It was, like, my third live show ever or something. It was not what I expected, but it was also like, it was Terminal 5 in New York, and it was, okay, they were pretty, like, that was right when they were getting big. And so I don't think it was like, I don't think Kyle and I had the same first show experience really. but you know, like it was from then on, that was my bar for live shows. And, right. you know, like, even at that point, there was a guy next to me that had seen them 13 times. And I was like, oh, my God, I hope someday I get to be that person. And here I am. And it's really amazing to be here that many years later and know all the words to the old songs and, like have a history with a band. And looking back, it's like, you know, I knew I loved them at, like, the first song that I ever heard, but right. over the years it's gotten, like, it's so much better now, you know? Right. Like, it's really cool to be able to watch them and the fan base evolve and yeah, grow with them. So.
The evolution of it, I think, you know, if we're to wrap up, for me, it was like personified with, you know, the theme of the weekend for Portland was we get together. And hearing that at the pandemic, and especially those shows after, and Steve's got this great guitar piece that rips me apart every time, just kind of shows, like, here's an album that, you know, people don't put as their top album normally. But here's the song that really kind of means something for the band, how it's evolved, you know, adding Steve into it. You know, visiting those old pieces, but, you know, at the show in Portland, you know, they start playing it. Steve, Craig does a little intro and we're like, you know, necks and arms, you know, holding each other, you know, just feeling it. You know, the band, the music, the friendship around it, you know, it makes me, looking at the calendar, like, I was going to skip Brooklyn and go to London, but I know a bunch of people from our group's going to start buying tickets when they go up. So I got to go. I got a problem.
Well, this has been awesome.
So thank you guys so much for doing this. This was great. And I really appreciate you recapping the whole Portland weekend for us. And are you guys going to Boston or Chicago?
Chicago, yeah.
You'll have some new friends at Chicago because we will both be there. So we hope to hook up with you.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Yeah, see you there. And I'm very excited for The Empty Bottle. That was probably, of all my shows, that was one of my favorite venues for a Hold Steady. Like, if I was going to drag someone to a Hold Steady show, I'd make sure they see one like Mississippi
Empty Bottle's Studios awesome.
Empty Bottle, for sure. So it'll be a good time.
Thank you guys so much for having us.
Thank you so much for doing it. All right, so that was a great interview with Kyle and Ella. We really appreciate them coming on the show and recapping the weekend, get together weekend in Portland. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
So I love their crazy confetti stories. And I just wanted to thank everybody for listening to us. The numbers have been phenomenal, and the engagement has just been great. And if you ever want to reach out to us, just look in the show notes. I'm going to leave a link to SpeakPipe where you can leave us a little message. What else are we going to leave a link to in the show notes?
Yeah, we're going to leave a link to Knowledge's GoFundMe. Again, just go on GoFundMe. You can search for The Waiting Room, which is a short film, or just Knowledge Raw. But we will have a link in the show notes to make it easier. We hope you do check that out and give if you can. And also keep in mind our link tree, which is linktr.ee/TheHoodRatRecap. There you can find all of our episodes. You can find all our social media. You can send us an email if you like. And if you hit the subscribe button, we will get your email and you can be on our mailing list and keep you up to date on all things The Hood Rat Recap.
All right. Shout out. We miss you, Kevin. Kevin is wherever. We miss you, buddy.
All right, so that's going to do it for us. That was Kyle. That was Ella. I'm Gasper. And that's Mike. And us guys, and all you guys and gals, we are all the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
Ooh, yeah. Killer party's on the show.